Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Jim Nintzel, recently retired as executive editor at the Tucson Weekly, and I'm sitting in today for Bill Buckmaster, who continues to recover from the broadcaster's worst nightmare, laryngitis. The Buckmaster Show broadcasts from the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio on radio station 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news and talk with worldwide live listening at buckmastershow.com. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Let's begin on the live line from Phoenix with ASU Professor Dennis Hoffman, who closely studies the regional economy in Arizona and conducts economic research for the most major businesses across the state. Since 1982, he has overseen the construction and maintenance of the tax revenue forecasting model used by the state of Arizona's Executive Budget Office. Dr. Hoffman is the director of the Seidman Research Institute at the W.P. Carey School of Business and director of ASU's Office of the University Economist. Dr. Hoffman, welcome to the show.
Jim, great to be with you today.
So, how would you describe the state of the state's economy at this point?
The state's economy is strong. We have inflation, but that inflation is hitting different people very differently. And I don't mean to downplay the pain that some people are feeling at the gas pump and if they're renting homes and have to commute long distances. There's a lot of pain, especially with those people. We're kind of a poster child for the CPI. Nationally, the CPI up here in Phoenix is north of 12% year over year, but that's driven by gas prices, used car prices, and our home appreciation. So guess what, Jim? If you own your own home and you can work from home and work on Zoom and work remotely, you're actually faring pretty well. And, the job market just continues to be very, very strong here in the state.
Despite all that, many people seem very pessimistic about the state of the economy. Do you have any thoughts on why that is?
Confidence measures and confidence metrics have, they've been Debbie Downers for the last few years, really. Pretty much ever since COVID, it's pretty hard to find optimistic people. There's a lot of chatter, of course, on cable news associated with, trying to make sure that people's attitudes are set in particular ways in advance of the elections. But actually, apart for the pain felt by some folks coming from inflation, the job market is strong, output is strong, the consumer is really endowed with a lot of pent-up cash and a lot of pent-up savings. The stock market's been a laggard recently, but I don't know if you've looked today, Jim, but your 401k is doing pretty well today.
So we'll see how it's doing tomorrow.
That's right. That's right. A one day does not make a trend. So it is. It's a little bit of a puzzle. I tend to watch what people do, not what they say in response to consumer sentiment surveys. When asked here a few months back, some folks were actually saying that the economy is worse than it was in June of 1980, and that's predates many of your listeners, I understand. But in June of 1980, we had 15% inflation and 8% unemployment, and the economy was in the almighty dumper. And, people were saying things are worse today. And, I guess my sense is be careful what you, what you're saying out there. Things could get much worse than they are right now, and we'll have to see what happens going forward.
Bearing in mind that a recession eventually is inevitable, how close do you think we are to sinking into one? We hear a lot of talk about that these days.
Well, we do, and people I think need to understand what the catalyst for that would be, and we have a Federal Reserve Board now that feels like they've slipped up a little bit and have not been ahead of this inflation monster. And so now they're going to take severe action. And by severe action, that means less money and credit in the system, higher mortgage rates, higher auto loan rates. You know, money is going to be tighter for everybody. And what they're trying to do is to curtail this seemingly insatiable demand. And all of that historically has brought about recessions. And people point to, you know, the recession of 82 and other Federal Reserve-induced recessions. So most economists, I would say, would put the odds of recession over the next year at somewhere between 40 and 60%.
And in terms of that, you mentioned earlier the housing issues, and it certainly seems like that's something that's becoming increasingly challenging, particularly for first time home buyers to purchase. Are we in a bubble, do you think, or are these values something that are going to hold as we move forward?
Well, hopefully not the bubble, anywhere near the bubble that we saw in the, 2008, 2009. And so that will depend upon how resilient our investor community is. They bought about 30 to 35% of the homes here recently. But they're buying them to rent them out. And so they're earning interest on them. I think that prices have rolled over. You're not seeing the bidding wars that we've seen. For those first-time home buyers, if they, if they have good credit and have the cash, I think sometime in the next 6 months, the real estate market's going to look much more attractive to them. They're going to have to be careful that they have, steady employment and, the wherewithal to put down a significant down payment, and that will be challenging for some. But I think this bidding frenzy and the investor frenzy has cooled and will continue to cool, let's say, over the next year. The housing sentiment indices have really rolled over here in the last 30 to 60 days.
How much of a issue is that with investors coming in and purchasing properties in the way that they are and kind of turning housing more into a commodity than an opportunity for individuals to pursue that American dream?
It's we could debate this, I think, at length. I think the investor argument would be, look, it's an infusion of cash and it provides real estate properties that we will happily rent to people and allow them access, to these homes without having to take on the obligation of a mortgage. The downside to that argument, of course, is that those renters never get a chance to accumulate any housing equity. And of course, that's that's the downside to that particular argument. But it certainly is a piece of the puzzle now. You hear the ads all the time, we'll pay cash for your home, and send us your email and we'll give you a price quote, and that's the investor voices screaming loudly that they want your home. I think those screams will be diminished here. I think they're softer now than they were 6 months ago, and I think they'll continue to soften.
It also seems to be leading to an increase in rent with some of these investors purchasing these properties and then seeing, and a lot of people I think are seeing rent increases, which makes it harder for them to find a place to live.
And that's right. And we'll have to see how that unfolds over the next year. I mean, there's so many investor properties out there. There might be getting to the point where there's an abundance of supply of potential rental properties, and that'll put downward pressure on rents, which would be a great, great thing, of course, for those folks that have had to face. I really feel compassion for the group out there, Jim, that, is commuting long distances, paying high gas prices, and renting. And I've had to face these big spikes in their in the cost of shelter here recently. I mean, that's really been tough.
I've only got time for one more question here, but I wanted to ask you, we're in Governor Ducey's final year. What are some of the key shifts in the economy you've seen over the course of the Ducey administration?
Well, we've got a great injection of manufacturing. I think we've got stability with respect to our relations with the folks south of the border. I'm not saying all is well and all is tranquil, but we certainly have warmed our relationship in trade with Mexico, and they're an important trade partner and business partner for us. And I think the governor's administration has clearly seen that and acted on it. His Commerce Authority has worked very effectively at battling for site selections and getting injections of manufacturing into the state. All that's been good. But look, Jim, I'm an educator. I look at economies that have invested in education, and I think we're woefully lacking in our investments in education from, all the way from, through P20, pre-K to college. And we just need to do more there. And we tinker around the edges with, allegedly, innovative educational reforms like the voucher program that just went in. But we need more invested in our education infrastructure if we're going to expect better outcomes and if we're going to expect to sustain those business relocations. Because at the end of the day, those folks are looking for quality workers and a quality workforce. And without the U of A and ASU and NAU putting out quality workers, they're just not going to come in the numbers that they could come if we had more resources.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. I'd like to thank our first guest today, ASU Professor Dennis Hoffman, economist at Arizona State University. Dr. Hoffman, thank you very much. I'm Jim Nintzels.
My best to everybody in Tucson. It's great to be with you today.
Thank you for spending some time with us. I'm Jim Nintzel. I'm filling in for Bill Buckmaster here. And we are going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with our Buckmaster Show financial consultant, Shelley Fishman.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I'm Jim Nintzel, former editor of the Tucson Weekly, recently retired. And I'm sitting in for Bill as he struggles to get back from his bout of laryngitis, which certainly puts him out of action in this business. We hope he'll be back soon. Wishing you the best, Bill. Thanks for the opportunity to come in here. Our next guest, financial consultant Shelley Fishman, just back from 3 weeks in San Diego. How's the weather out there, Shelley?
The weather out here is hot and dry. The weather in San Diego is somewhere near perfect. I tried to bring some rain back, but it wouldn't follow me.
And you, on Tuesdays, usually talk with Bill about what a lousy day it is for the market. And yet today, different story.
So it's,
you know, it's the opposite
fault.
Day.
It's Bill's fault. He's not here. You're here. And the market's up 700 points.
There you
so
go.
I would take credit for that if I were you.
100%.
Yeah.
Yes. Overall, this has been a pretty bad year for the market, and investors, you know, have some challenges in dealing with the volatility. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, the market has been down almost into bear market territory in the first 6 months of the year. July has actually not been bad, and we had a very good day last Friday. Yesterday started off great and then tanked, but today started off good and remained good. So I have told Bill that my forecast for the year for the market is still in the area of 3-5% up overall from the beginning of January. I'm sticking with that. I think there's no reason to believe that this market is going to stay in the dumpster because, as your previous guest said, the economy, and he was talking about Arizona, but if I take a look at the economy in the United States, it's doing awfully well by and large. On average, we're doing fine. Now, as Professor Hoffman mentioned, if you're one of those people who is particularly subject to the effects of what's inflated right now, you're not doing that well. But on average, the economy is fine. Unemployment is at near all-time lows. We have the consumer spending is at near all-time highs. We've recovered from on the commercial side. We've recovered from the lows of the pandemic. Our GDP passed where we were in the beginning of the pandemic. We have slightly below where we probably should be in public sector spending, because government's kind of cut back a little bit. We've got a bunch of cash in the market, Jim. People were hoarding cash. We got two or three rounds of of stimulus that isn't all been spent yet. And so what we're seeing, except for inflation and spookiness in the market, is that the economy is very strong. When you compare our economy to the economies of the rest of the industrialized world, we're the envy of the industrialized world. They wish, I mean, the Euro nations wish that their economies were as strong as ours. So, to minimize the effects of the headwinds we're facing, but, you know, absent some, let's call it unanticipated headwinds that we can predict, but we know that they're there, sitting there as potentials, but assuming that they don't all kind of creep up on us at once, then I think we're going to be just fine.
So you're not saying sell.
Oh, no. In fact, that would be about the worst thing you could do now if you're an investor. We were talking just before during the break, the average gain in equities over the past 60 or 70 years has been about 12% per year. And we've been sticking pretty good, you know, pretty closely to that. The average investment portfolio in the U.S. is 3% a year. And you scratch your head and go, what's going on? And it's because people get spooked when the market goes down, and so they sell low, and then they see the turnaround, and they start buying after they're convinced that the turnaround is going to last for a while, and so they buy high. Sell low, buy high is not a prescription for getting rich. And I'm not suggesting that the reason you should be invested is to get rich, but a lot of people think that that'd be a good thing to happen.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's sort of the point.
So don't chase the curve.
Okay. And you did mention inflation is a concern out there, but we are seeing gas prices go down a little. And we just saw a tweet from Joe Biden, I think about 2 weeks ago, where he told those oil companies to lower their prices. Can Joe Biden take credit for this? I think I drop of 50 cents on average.
He gets the blame for everything. So, you know, let's let him take credit, and then we'll all smile and roll our eyes. Clearly, the president has minimal impact on what the economy is doing, but he has some. And there are some things I think the president should be doing. For instance, one of the direct contributors to inflation are all of the Trump tariffs that were put in place in the last administration, most of which were senseless. They go right to prices because what happens is the importing companies have to pay those tariffs when they import whatever it is they're importing, steel or electronic components and that kind of thing. And they pass it on to consumers. If we were to reverse those tariffs, we could probably ease inflation by maybe 2 points. Now, there are some political problems with doing that. I get that. But there are some ways the president could, I think, or this administration could have an effect, positive effect on inflation. The other thing is I worry about the Fed. I worry about the Fed, and Professor Hoffman was worried about this too, of being too aggressive. If they're too aggressive in raising interest rates in order to fight inflation, they could force the economy into a recession. And that, I think, would have a worse effect on people who are badly affected by inflation. In other words, if you're unemployed, that's worse than just having to pay more for gas. And during recessions, unemployment goes up significantly. So
that's part of the idea, right? To increase unemployment to reduce inflation?
No.
I mean, there's people who – I don't know that – when I say the idea, I think there are people who argue that
increased unemployment is an unintended consequence of fighting inflation through interest rates. But it happens, and everybody knows it happens. So unless – there's a darn good reason for forcing this economy into a recession and forcing unemployment to go up to 7, 8, 9%, then we shouldn't be doing it. In fact, one of the reasons the market is doing so well today is the Fed kind of telegraphed that they wouldn't do anything extreme next week with interest rates, that they'd And by that, I mean 0.75% instead of 1%. I prefer them to just do 0.5% or 0.25% at this point, and then wait for the GDP number to come out in the end. It's the end of this month, to see what happened in the second quarter before doing anything rash. But you know, the Fed's job is to increase employment, to make sure full employment, and decrease inflation to their target 2% rate. And that's all they look at. So I'm a little worried about that. That's one of the known unknowns about what might happen over the next couple of months.
And I think we've got about a minute and a half left. So okay. Real quick, it does seem like paychecks are higher, but inflation is offsetting that.
Yes. So if you take a look at paychecks, they're up on average again about 5.5%. Inflation on average for the year about 7.5%. So the average worker, and there's no such thing as the average anything, but the average worker is then about 2% net of inflation. Now that's not good, but it's not a catastrophe.
All right. I think we're going to have to leave it there. My guest has been Shelley Fishman, the Buckmaster Show financial consultant. I'm Jim Ninsel, sitting in for Bill Buckmaster as he recovers from laryngitis. And we're going to take a break.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I'm Jim Ninsel, a recently retired, longtime Tucson Weekly editor, now trying my hand as a radio news talk host for a day while Bill Buckmaster bounces back from his bout with laryngitis. We're in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio on 1030 KVOI The Voice, and we love Green Things for everything for your garden. Great Talavera pottery from their sister business Zocalo Village on the 13-acre Green Things property at 3384 East River Road. Open daily and on the web at greenthings.com and zocalovillage.com. Let's go now to our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures, a real estate and property management, to speak with Democrat Adelita Grijalva. She's vice chair of the Pima County Board of Supervisors, representing District 5, and the chairwoman of the Tucson Unified School District Governing Board. A couple different hats you're wearing, Adelita.
Yeah, I am. Hi, Jim. Nice to hear you.
Great to have you on the show. Thank you for spending some time with us today.
Absolutely. Happy to.
I'd like to start with stuff over at the county, because election season is here. Early ballots have gone out in the mail. Pima County has set up vote centers for the first time. And that's instead of having you have to go specifically to your precinct to cast a ballot, you can walk into any of these vote centers, and they have computers set up to check you in, make sure you're a properly registered voter, and give you your ballot printed up there right on the spot. Talk a little bit about the shift to these vote centers and why you decided to do that.
Well, we're one of the only counties in Arizona that hasn't gone this route. And so we were one of the last holdouts. And I think, having been a person who's trying to encourage people to go vote, if you don't do it on, you know, mail, that's the easiest way I know. But I personally have always loved going in person. But if you don't figure it out and time it just right, either right before you go to work, right after you pick up the kids or something, it's one of those things that sort of can fall off of your radar of things to do. So this makes it a lot easier, because any vote center you see, anytime you see the vote here sign, regardless of where you are, you can stop there and they will pull up the ballot specific to your address and you can vote. And I think the accessibility factor is going to be really positive for our community.
You mentioned vote by mail, and I think probably 8 out of 10 voters are doing it that way these days. However, we've had a lot of concerns, particularly from Republican voters and Republican Party officials, about election fraud, and it's often without evidence. And I understand we're already hearing that people are suggesting that ballots are being stolen out of mailboxes, possibly by mules.
Yeah.
How concerned are you about misinformation in regards to the election?
That's exactly what it is. It's misinformation. And so I do think that, because it is really specific to one party, we probably will see more Election Day voters from the Republican Party, so they can ensure that that is their vote. And even though our ballots are tracked, we can find it. It, you know, lets you know that it's arrived. In the elections, you know, in the elections office, and it's being recorded. I do think that that's one of the things that we're hearing, is that we should expect to see more Republicans on Election Day voting at these vote centers.
And you know, one of the most important elements of our democracy is faith in that election system, and that the results are legitimate. Is the county going to take steps to counter misinformation and try to reassure the public that elections are secure?
We have had a presentation, I think, nearly every board meeting on what's the update, how things are going. We've had our new elections director, Constance Hargrove, who is very knowledgeable and very aware of all of the issues, has been able to answer every question. And we still hear, you know, misinformation about who is going to be able to vote, and people that are going to be bringing many, many ballots to, you know, the voting centers. And none of that is accurate. And we've looked into all of the different scenarios that have been presented, not just here in Pima County, but all over the state and the nation. And very rarely is there ever anything. And so I do think it is a narrative that is probably trying to scare people into voting, and I just hope that people vote. That's it. I think that it's a it is absolutely the wonderful part of our democracy, and that I just hope people exercise that right.
Let's talk a little bit about the budget. The board approved a budget, and as part of that process, I think towards the end, you wanted to see an additional, I think these numbers are right, $2 million in open space and conservation efforts and an additional $4 million for housing. Let's start with the housing. $4
million. It was $5 million.
Oh, $5 million. Okay. Well, thank you for the clarification. $5 million for housing. And how do you see that money being spent? Obviously, we've been talking with our guests earlier. We had a conversation about the challenges that first-time home buyers are certainly facing with acquiring houses because of the rising prices. And on top of that, a lot of investors purchasing housing and then making rents unaffordable for folks. So
right.
When you look at $5 million being spent on housing efforts, how do you see that playing out in terms of policy and programs?
So ideally what we're looking at is to get a plan from and working with the city and the county and our other nonprofit partners that are also trying to build affordable homes and homes that people can afford. And so $5 million is really just a drop in the bucket. But what I was hoping for is acknowledging that it is a priority in our county and have a line item there with funding attached makes us more attractive, and the likelihood is greater of us gaining some federal funds and grants and competitive grants. And so I think that that's really what was motivating me, aside from, you know, there might be some renovation projects, there might be like rehabbing other facilities. I've talked with our county administrator, both Mr. Huckleberry before and now Ms. Lesher, about the schools that are vacant all over that I know about, unfortunately, because of my other hat in TUSD, and looking at how we can renovate some of those properties, because that kind of stuff has been happening all over the country. And so it really is just trying to get us a little creative as to how we're going to address some of these issues and partnering up so every dollar can stretch as far as possible.
And are you, is this and helping people with down payments? Is it building lower cost housing so that people don't need help with the down payments? Is it rental assistance? Is it eviction prevention? What are we talking about?
I think it's yes to all of those, provided, you know, we don't have that funding in the federal system. And so we are seeing that, you know, the city is no longer in the competitive process for those grants to help with rental assistance. So all of that, the city, the people that were looking for that service in the city are now in our county system. And so right now there are still federal funds available, but when they aren't, what are some things that this $5 million can sort of help support and what initiatives? And so I'm looking forward to getting, a pretty comprehensive presentation because we have experts in Pima County and the city.
I had heard a lot of complaints during the worst of the pandemic that a lot of this housing money or eviction prevention money wasn't actually being distributed. Has that changed? And were you frustrated by the failure to get that money out to prevent evictions?
Well, you know, we were creating a system. There wasn't any system really that was established that could get the funding out. You know, how do we get the applications? What is the process going to look like? And what is the turnaround time? So I think that the county has done an incredible job of establishing, you know, the disbursement of funds. And so much so that we've had other cities come and look at what our system looks like, because we were really gaining a lot of accolades. I mean, we were doing better than the state in dispersing of funding. So I think that we at the county have done a really good job. And then we also have, you know, a legal arm, and to ensure that people that are going through the eviction process have an attorney that is there to help represent them. That is helping as well. So I believe that it's better. It definitely was a lot better. And then we had an influx of cases from the city that I think that we've now absorbed pretty aptly and are moving forward.
All right. If you're just joining us, I'm Jim Nintzel, sitting in for Bill Buckmaster on the Buckmaster Show. My guest is Adelita Grajava, who is on both the Pima County Board of Supervisors and the Tucson Unified School District Board. We're going to take a quick break here and come back and talk a little bit on open space and education and, I hope, COVID.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Hi, this is Tom Sullivan. Join me weeknights from 7 to 10 for the Tom Sullivan Show on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I'm Jim Nintzel, filling in for Bill Buckmaster, who is trying to find his voice after misplacing it in the final moments of Friday's show as that laryngitis finally got the best of him. We're wishing Bill the best. And if you're looking for an escape from the Tucson heat, Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico offers at least 10 degrees of relief, and it's only a 3-hour drive east of Tucson. Start planning now by visiting southwestnewmexico.org for tips on great places to stay and tons of recreational activities. We continue now with our conversation with Pima County Supervisor and TUSD Governing Board Member Adelita Grajava with us on the Buckmaster Live Line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Supervisor Grajava, We left off before we got to the open space and conservation dollars that you wanted set aside in the budget. What do you hope to accomplish with those dollars?
Well, you know, the last time we were able to purchase properties, was with the bond. And so what we wanted to do was establish a fund. So if there is an area that is available for sale that's near a protected area, one of our conservation areas, parks, anything like that, that there's funding available to be able to go through the negotiations process and purchase. So really just to kind of protect and acquire more open space for conservation efforts, for, you know, the protecting our natural resource, which is what everyone comes here to Tucson to see, I think.
I want to shift over to the school district. And, you know, we are seeing COVID cases rising again this summer. I think we maybe saw a slight dip, but also we don't really know the numbers because so many people are using home tests or not testing at all. And I wonder, how do you see COVID impacting the schools this year? There's limits to what school districts can now do in terms of mitigation efforts. So I'm wondering what are your concerns?
I mean, really, all we can do is make sure that we have our purification systems are functioning well, that we have our AC units and all of, and everything we need to get, you know, all of our cleaning supplies, all of those things all together. We're going to have masks available. And, you know, I think what it's going to look like is a regular first day of school with a smattering of masks. At the end of last year, masks weren't required, but, you know, when I would drop my kids off at school, the vast majority of students and staff were wearing masks over the summer. That changed pretty significantly. And now when you walk around our community, you can pick out the people that are wearing masks. And so I anticipate that our numbers will go up when schools are back in session. We still had a fairly consistent number of COVID cases, even considering the smaller number of students that we had in our schools. We had about 11,000 students in our schools for summer school, but our numbers stayed about the same as when school was totally in session. So we're seeing a lot more of the spread. We're hearing about the variants that are incredibly contagious, and the fact that if you catch one of these variants, you can catch it again 3 to 4 weeks later. And so I'm concerned about some of the absentees that will happen as a result of children being sick.
And you're also facing a teacher shortage at TUSD, and you're looking at a company to do math instruction online for some classes. Can you talk a little bit about that proposal?
We had a presentation. I don't know that any of us were very excited about the prospect of, you know, outsourcing our math classes. We have a critical shortage in math. What we've been doing is not a sustainable model, which is asking our math teachers to give up their planning period and paying them an additional amount. But, you know, it's not a sustainable way to, you know, keep our teachers happy. It's a burnout. I mean, that's supposed to be something that's in an emergency, and we've been doing that. So Dr. Trujillo presented this. I'm not a huge fan of the idea. We'd still need a proctor or someone in the classroom, but the person online would be the teacher of record. I was asking if we could get creative on, you know, maybe utilizing some of our math teachers. Let's say you may have a teacher at Rincon that has a smaller number in an advanced math class. Can we live stream that teacher into some of our other schools? So they're looking at some of the technology and the ways we can do that. I know that it's been done in other districts around the country, but we haven't done it here in Tucson Unified.
And why are you guys facing such a issue with the teacher shortages?
Well, it's funding, quite honestly. What happened is in the last, I joined the board in 2002, and we could see a decline, I want to say about 5 years later, in the number of students that were opting to go into teaching at the U of A. So when you have more people retiring than you have people going through school to become a teacher, that's what happens. We saw a lot of people sort of change gears with COVID. I mean, it was incredible stress on our teachers, and yet we realized how much we need them, but the funding is still, like, even though we did get a little bump, consistently it's been going down every year. And, you know, when I graduated from high school in 89, TUSD was receiving more funding than we are now per pupil. And I don't, you know, we had typewriter labs. We didn't have, you know, computer labs and computers in every classroom and the need for technology. And so things have consistently become more and more expensive. And, but the funding level has stayed, you know, we're ranked, 48th between 48th and 50th every year.
And funding. It seemed like teachers were really kind of developing some political muscle a few years ago with the Red for Ed movement. And then we had the COVID pandemic. And that outbreak and the closing of the schools, did that create some blowback against the education community among parents who were frustrated by school closures and the challenges of trying to do the remote schooling?
Yeah, you know, I think that what we heard overwhelmingly was, thank you for keeping our children safe. Thank you for keeping our teachers safe. But we did have some big concerns in our community. I mean, what I think is really telling is one of the first things we had to do is figure out a way to feed our kids. And so our schools are a hub for many needs, including education. And so those caused a lot of stress. If you're a teacher, you know, online and you can see that a child is struggling and there really isn't anything that you can do, it becomes incredibly frustrating. I heard from a lot of my teacher and administrator friends that it was really one of the most trying, difficult times. And, you know, being a parent of kids that were isolated, it's just incredibly difficult. And so I think we're still trying to rebuild and help our students learn what they missed, because online is not a great option for a lot of students. I mean, we did a really good job as a district, I think, and our teachers did amazing work and our support staff did everything that they could, but, you know, it was still difficult to do online.
You know, the legislature passed some education bills this session, and one of them, if I recall correctly, makes it possible for parents to sue teachers if they feel their parental rights have been violated. What's the impact of that on teacher morale, but also just if a teacher gets sued, do they have to lawyer up? Does the district step in? What's going on with that?
I think the district has made a commitment that we are prepared to support and help any teacher that is in any kind of position like that. I think really all this stems from masks. It's just, to me, the most ridiculous and most frustrating. All we were trying to do was keep kids safe and keep our school safe. And, you know, we heard from parents overwhelmingly in the call to the audience. These are parents that their children do not even attend their schools, by the way. But obviously the legislature was hearing from those same parents.
And the other thing you guys, I think, are dealing with, and we only have 2 minutes, so it's not much time to get into this, but the whole, we're just hearing so much hysteria about CRT out there at this point. And
we don't teach it in our schools. We've said it a million different ways. It's not something that is taught in K-12. You know, I think that we teach it at the university. We have Mexican American Student Services and we have classes that teach culturally relevant courses, not the same thing.
And what is the difference? And we only have a minute.
A lot of it has to do with the resources that students use, but really what we're trying to do is show history through a lens. And so either you're looking at it through the lens of contributions of African American, Native American, Mexican American people, and you're just showing another side of history that isn't usually in our books. Pretty much it. That's what we do on our schools. And I think that, you know, having had my high school, my daughter in high school finally able to take one of these courses, she said, we never learned any of this stuff in history. And it's great. And it is history. We're not making it up. We're just sharing it.
So you weren't teaching them. You're not teaching people to hate Whitey. Is what you're saying.
No, they're not. They're just acknowledging the contributions. And I think that that is a huge difference. And the fact that we have many, I would say 99% of the legislators that voted to ban culturally, you know, critical race theory in our schools never have attended any of our classes, so they can understand what it is that's actually being taught. So I'm not afraid of, you know, we're not teaching that, so we won't be seen.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. I want to thank my guests, Pima County Supervisor and TUSD Board Member Adelina Grajava, as well as Dennis Hoffman from the ASU Economic School, and Shelley Fishman, Buckmaster Show Financial Correspondent. Hopefully Bill will be back soon.